As your tactical officer, I will continue to do my best to ensure a safe passage home. As a Vulcan, I share the following sentiment. Live long and prosper.
Hello and welcome to Earl Grey and the Cards, Season 2, Episode 2.
Learning Curve.
Learning Curve.
Okay, so today we are doing Learning Curve. It's a season finale to Voyager Season 1. And Dan and I, we'll be discussing that episode and all things... not all things about Learning Curve, but mainly the Tuvok, the best Tuvok aspects of that episode. And, you know, I guess we'll talk about, is the episode any good or not? So, here we are. First off, though, on our last episode, we forgot to give a synopsis of the episode that we did, which was Ex Post Facto. It was probably a very forgettable episode.
Yeah,
so,
I
probably needed a synopsis. Oh my god, I can't talk today. So, okay, today we'll do the synopsis of Learning Curve. And, as is stated on IMDb, as Neelix's cooking sickens Voyager itself. Tuvok runs the four most problematic Maquis malcontents through Starfleet-style boot camp. So,
I guess we can break it down. That's
basically it. Didn't really have a season finale kind of vibe to it.
No, it was a weird one.
Yeah,
it seemed like it read like a season two episode. Two or three kind of thing.
Yeah, they only did 13 episodes in season one. I'm not even too sure why that is.
I know some of the season one episodes that they wrote and recorded didn't air until season two.
Yeah, same with season three as well. They did Sam. But I felt Learning Curve could have been in the middle of any season and it would have, felt just as normal.
It wasn't a season.
No. That being said, Learning Curve is a much better episode than Ex Post Facto, and it is a much more Tuvok-centric episode than Ex Post Facto. And Dan, I hope you've changed your mind about doing a whole season dedicated to Tuvok just a little bit after watching this episode.
Yeah, this one has a lot more potential. The downside to using a Vulcan for the second season is that unbending and stoic.
Yep.
So there's a lot of that.
Yep.
Not a bad thing, but
not a bad thing. Okay. Before we get more into this episode, we learned over the past week that Star Trek Picard Season 2 will be featuring Q as one of the main, adversaries or companions, whatever word you want to use to describe Q. And I think I can speak for both of us when I say that we're both pretty excited for Q's return.
Yeah, it's going to be awesome to see them on the screen again together. That's going to be cool.
Yeah, because I know we've read books about Q and Picard joining forces to save the universe, right? And
the chemistry they have.
Yeah, and we spoke about that on our inaugural season of Earl Grey and Picard. Some of the best Picard episodes featured Q, mainly because of how of what their chemistry was like, how they interplay with each other. So
yeah, it's gonna be fun to watch. And John Delancey's aged really well, so expect good things.
Yep, and I'm hoping we will be doing more than just a Star Trek Picard season two thoughts, one episode, like a one-off one, right? Like I hope the quality will improve to the point where we can review episodes individually as opposed to just talking about the whole season. I'm skeptical because of the way they do the seasons now of Star Trek.
As it stands now, I'm not hopeful, but we'll see.
I generally do like serialized storytelling, the way they're doing it now, they're doing it in the binge watching format, right? And
which is fine, but
it
didn't work this time.
I don't know if it works for Star Trek necessarily. I'll go back to DS9, which is the best example of how to do a serialized show, is where you have an overarching concept story for a season, but you can still have individual one-off episodes in between while the background story plays on without always being the central focus of each episode. You know?
Yeah, you still have your Monster of the Week.
Yeah.
And the overarching plot.
Yeah. But, you know, but like with the new way they're doing it, it's just all plots. And no, they're taking back on the character, I feel. You know, I don't know.
Well, again, like the way they did Picard, right? Every episode, they seem like they were rehashing the plot over and over and over again. Right? Get it? You're trying to get off the planet. We get it? You're trying to get here. We get it.
Yeah.
You're trying to do this. We get it. You love Data. You don't need to say it so often.
Yeah. Yeah.
It really took away from the whole story.
Yeah. Well, we could do a whole new episode about our thoughts on season one of Star Trek Picard and what didn't work.
Star Trek Picard Part 2.
Yeah.
Continues to suck.
Maybe, you know, maybe that's why we don't have so many viewers, is because we're so
negative.
So negative. Well, is that the word, you know, realistic, or I don't know. Dan, correct, yeah. what beer are you drinking today, Dan?
The first one is the Waterloo IPA from Waterloo.
An original IPA title, Waterloo Beer.
It's from Kitchener, I believe. Yeah, Waterloo Go and Kitchener. It's interesting. Not sold yet.
Not sold yet, huh?
Nope. Oh, my second one is the Cowbell Brewing Co. based out of Blythe, Ontario. The Hazy Days Juicy IPA. I'm hopeful about that one. I don't think I've ever had that one. I've had the Waterloo before. I feel like I had the same impression then that I did now, so we'll see by the time I hit the bottom of the can, but yeah, I'm hopeful.
Okay, so can you give us a spoiler of what your rating will be on that beer, or do you want to finish the whole can first before you give it a rating?
Probably 3 or 4.
3 or 4, right? So not that great.
Not awesome.
You know, actually, before we started the podcast today, Dan and I tried an Earl Grey beer. There was an actual... was it an IPA?
Lager?
Yeah, I think it was just a lager. Yeah, Dan's getting it right now, but it's it tasted
a wheat beer,
yes, and it had some interesting ingredients. Dan, you want to read off the ingredients, maybe?
Yeah, we're looking at okay, water, barley, malt, wheat. Okay, fair enough. Black tea, bergamot oil, cornflower petals, hops, yeast, and coriander.
Yeah,
so some of those are some odd choices to have in a beer.
Yes, and I wasn't a huge fan. I don't think you were a huge fan, but you said you would have another one, right?
Well, I would finish the can.
You'd finish the can as opposed to me.
I wouldn't have another one.
Oh, okay.
it was different. I'm not a black tea fan. I think it's a black tea. I think it's the coriander. Mm. But it's made by... Hang on here. Where are we? Collective Arts, in London.
Really?
Okay. No, that's not there. Nope.
Okay.
Local to New York.
Sorry, who is it?
New York. Yeah, so they're brewed in New York.
What's the brewery? It is Collective Arts, though, isn't it?
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah, their beer is usually spot on, but this one not too much. So, good try.
Yeah, well, I mean, we have to do it. It's an Earl Grey beer.
Earl Grey wheat beer.
Yeah. Earl Grey wheat beer.
All right, what are you drinking, Steve?
So I am drinking a beer from Muskoka Brewery called Hazed and Confused Juicy IPA. I've only had a quarter of it so far, but so far it's I quite like it. It does have a juicy sort of aftertaste to it. I like the can. It's a rather classy looking bearded man with his head just exploding, I guess, from the deliciousness of the beer. But I'm not really ready to give it a full review yet, a full rating, because I've had so little of it. But so far, so good. It has, what's the alcohol content of it? It's a 6.5%, so a pretty standard alcohol content for an IPA. I'll talk more about it a little bit later once I have a bit more of it. But so far, so good. I am not disgusted by it, as I had with the Earl Grey beer earlier. But not bad so far. Not bad so far. So, yeah. Okay, I have another beer, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. So, yes, with this episode, let's talk about the intro. The intro starts off with Janeway in this really uber-Victorian sort of setting. You know, she has this this garb on that's like from, yeah, the Victorian era, and she's... It doesn't fit Janeway's character whatsoever.
No, not at all.
Not at all. And I see Janeway's holodeck programs to be more science-based, more Indiana Jones kind of based. Very, like, kind of like what Picard would do. You know, like, Picard is a man who needs adventure, who needs excitement, who needs the thrill of a chase. Janeway gives off a similar sort of vibe in that regard.
Yeah, Starship Captain.
You know, so I cannot imagine Janeway's go-to holodeck program being a debutante. You know, is that the word you would...
Governess.
Like, governess, yes.
Nanny, basically.
Yeah.
It doesn't seem like there's nothing wrong with that, but it doesn't seem like her shtick.
No.
Very obvious here.
Yeah. And it didn't really have anything to do with the rest of the episode at all.
Didn't come up at all. Like, why would you even show... Why is that your cold open?
Yeah.
It makes no sense.
That was a bad cold open.
What the hell? I know they come back that later.
Do they, though? Like, I mean, like, I know there is another episode where she does that in season two.
But isn't there a thing with the mom, the dead mom, and the ghost and all that? Isn't there some sort of interaction there?
There is later on in season two. Are you talking about the episode today or in a future episode?
No, yeah. But the reference to the cold open today.
Oh yeah,
that episode is brought up later. But like in this episode, it has nothing at all to do with the episode itself. Like, it's such a weird.
Yeah, I just felt the Voyager writers could have found another holodeck program for Janeway to be immersed in, you know, instead of this.
Or they could have used the, what's his face, the dude who got in trouble for trying to fix the gel pack. Show him fixing the gel pack as the cold open, and all of a sudden the lights go out.
Yeah.
Oh, is he a saboteur? Is he
making
a mistake? Is everybody doing that? That's a cold open.
Yeah.
That would ties into the rest of the story.
Yeah, exactly. That would have been... See, man, we should have written these Voyager episodes, you know?
Yeah, well, 25 years in the past, right? Like, it's a lot of hindsight.
Yeah, that's true. We should just make a new Voyager show, you know? Just like do a redo of the whole show. I'll be Tom Paris. You can be Chakotay. You can be Chakotay. We'll do a better Chakotay.
I
like Chakotay.
Yeah, a little less...
Kikuchi Moya?
Well, yeah, a little more focus on maybe honest native practices or not made up. Native practices, if anything.
All right, so since you're not native, you could impeach Chakotay then. You,
that's
you,
true.
You
yeah,
need
yeah,
a real.
Yeah. Well, I should never. I mean, he's not native either. Should never have been.
You mean like the actor?
The actor,
yeah.
Not native at all.
No. Should have been a real native man. Yeah. How many white males? There's only Paris. That's the only.
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, he's the only white guy. A little different than Enterprise, where they're all white.
They're all white. I never really thought about that. No.
Well, the funny thing about watching Enterprise too is you forget which character is which.
That's true. They do, yeah. Like Trip and Tucker, they even have the first same letters,
yeah.
Right?
Yeah, they just got lazy.
Yeah. Anyway, so Dan and I are in agreement that the beginning of this episode is complete bunk.
You should look up Janeway Lambda 1 on Wikipedia. The entry about that 2-minute holodeck visualization will astound you.
Yeah, Dan showed it to me on his phone, and he was scrolling for a good 30 seconds there.
There's so much information about that for no reason.
Yeah, after this episode, I might actually read that. So Tuvok's handling, his initial handling of Dolby, you know. Like, most people would have been rattled by Dolby's anger and petulance, but no, Tuvok, you know, just stood his ground and was very logical, and, like, there's never any show of emotion, obviously, but I mean, most people of the Voyager crew would have been a bit taken aback by his, you know, yelling, by being yelled in the face by this unknown crewman, basically, right? So.
I thought it was weird. Didn't Tuvok serve on the Maquis ship?
Briefly, yeah.
Yeah, didn't he infiltrate the ship? He should know some of those people. He should have some idea.
Yeah, he should learn to be a little bit flexible.
Yeah, shouldn't have needed Neelix to walk him through that.
That's true.
But he's, you know, inflexible and unwilling to bend, so part of it.
Yeah, that's kind of the theme of the episode, I guess, right? Learning to be less rigid. So we learn that Tuvok was an instructor at the academy for 16 years. And, you gotta respect the way he deals with the insubordinate Maquis, you know? Like, I mean, he has his training regimen in the cargo bay, and you can definitely tell that he was an instructor at the academy, you know, just by his cadence, the way he delivers instructions and whatnot, you know? So he's a very good drill instructor, but... You know, a very good Vulcan drill instructor, you know. There's no, like, yelling in front of people's faces, but there's still a very stern and direct approach to him that I respect.
Jumping ahead a little bit.
Okay.
The scene in the cafeteria, when he looks at a bunch of them and then shows them the planets, all that, and Tuvok figures out and talks to them. That whole scene, didn't that seem like a very Vulcan cry for help? Because Neelix comes up, he doesn't shoot away. Neelix says, come over here. He just wanders over. He's watching and listening. He's not trying to downplay Neelix. He's not trying to talk over him or ignore him, whatever. It's just, he's listening, like he's, you know, grasping at straws.
Yeah.
That's like a Vulcan scream for help.
Yeah.
That was, watching that scene, that's all I can think of.
Tuvok sitting all alone there with, looking
facing the wrong way.
Facing the wrong way, Good on Neelix, you know, he was doing his job well as the morale officer. How's your beer going, Dan?
Well, I'm on to the...
You're on the Earl Grey one?
Earl Grey, it's not great.
Not great, but you're getting through it. It's more than
I'll slog through, but we'll see how it goes.
All right. Well, it's only at 4.7%. It's like water, basically.
Not good water.
But we'll post the can on the Twitter page so you can see what it looks like. But it's, I mean, we had to have reviewed this beer at some point. It's an Earl Grey beer. How could we have not?
It's something that makes any sense, right? It's got our name in it. We have to. Sorry that I'm the one doing the testing.
Well, if anyone ever sees, like, Dan and Steven named beer out there, you know, we'll definitely review it on the show. And, yeah, again, you know, if anyone else wants to ever send us beer from wherever you are, we'll review this beer, honestly.
Yeah,
all right. Okay, we're going to take a quick break, and we'll be right back with that information. Okay, and we're back. I was just looking up this episode on Memory Alpha, and going back to the Janeway Hall novel, Ron Wilkerson, who is actually a producer on Voyager, stated that Jerry Taylor, who's another executive producer, came up with a storyline for Janeway's Hollow novel. And he says, I'm not sure where it's going, but I really trust her because she's got such great instincts. It's in Jerry's head so far, and I can't wait to see more. Well, Ron, it's it wasn't a good instinct, and there's not much more, fortunately. So you were very wrong about your instincts about Janeway's Hollow novel. It's just not in her character. The Delta Flyers podcast agrees with me. The actors, Robert Duncan McNeil and Garrett Wong, they also hated Janeway's Hollow novel. So it was a terrible idea. Dan and I were just saying, you know, we could see her in an Indiana Jones, female Indiana Jones kind of Hollow novel that would have suited her character a lot more. You know, or some scientist who may be playing like Madame Curie, you know. Something like that.
Freedom fighter, France in World War II kind of thing.
Yeah.
The other...
Which we do see, actually, later.
Yeah, that's true, actually. Season 4?
Yeah, season, like, 6. Five. It was the Hirogen holodeck one, remember? Yeah.
Well, then when she's with Q fighting off the Civil War.
Civil War, yeah, that's right. Yeah, that's much more in line with the character.
Yeah, exactly.
But as, like, some governess, give me a break, man. Give me a break. Jerry Taylor, what were you thinking?
Well, with Tuvok interacting with the four, you know, cadets, the four Maquis, the one Bajoran, the young guy, he had the earpiece, the earring.
Yep.
And then Tuvok says, "Oh, you can't wear it." Blah blah blah. Like, so, Starfleet has regressed a little bit because. at least here in Canada, if it's an item of religious significance, mm-hmm. you were allowed to wear it no matter what it
is. That's true. That's true.
Except for like knives and stuff. But beanie, burka, like all that stuff, it's totally allowed.
Except so, in Quebec, I believe.
Yeah,
right?
No face coverings in Quebec.
Yeah. So I was thinking the same thing. I'm surprised Starfleet has such a policy.
Like the bully in his necklace. Like, okay, yeah, I can see that. But
yeah, we're sort of playing the episode again in the background here. But,
oh, yeah, it helps jog your memory a little bit.
Yeah.
You were saying, like, the problem with Tuvok episodes, he's an awesome character, and he's awesome to watch, but he's very, very, very similar episode to episode. So we don't get the big grandiose speeches the way we do with Picard.
Yeah.
Or even Riker speeches, like something like that.
Yeah.
So it's finding the little
nuances.
Yeah, the nuances. That's a good one, yeah.
Yeah.
It's a little difficult.
It's the same with Seven of Nine, I feel. You know, she's basically the same in most episodes. She hasn't really changed too much throughout the series. So if we were to do a season of Seven of Nine, we would run into the same problems. You know, she's very, again, very Vulcan in many respects, very stoic, and
like with her, you get that, like that episode where she starts downloading all of those Starship's database.
The Voyager conspiracy.
Starts going crazy,
yeah.
Stuff like that. With Tuvok, I know we get stuff like that. We just have to find it.
Yeah, I mean, we have the upcoming episodes, Innocence and Meld, which will be Meld will be good. Yeah, those are very, very interesting Tuvok episodes where their character does grow a little bit. Okay. Okay, so continuing on in the episode, where are we here now? Yeah, I've always thought, you know, there's a certain humor to how Tuvok delivers his lines, I felt, you know. Just his lack of emotion makes it funny. You know, Tuvok is sometimes so hilarious without trying to be hilarious at all, I find, you know. His delivery, his pitch. Because a lot of the things he says should be have to be delivered with some sort of pitch and tone that would, you know, that we normally come to expect from certain lines, if you know what I mean. But the way he delivers things, it's just pure flat, and it makes me laugh. You know, I'm trying to think of a specific example, but in that cargo bay scene, when he talks to, you know, the McKee crew members, you know, it should be delivered in, like, we expect it to be delivered in angry sort of militaristic sort of tone. But he delivers it calmly, coolly, flatly.
Matter of fact, yes.
And it is hilarious to me, at least, you know, because it's so different and unexpected. So, in a way, Tuvok and Neelix, like, Tuvok is, one could say he's one of the funniest characters in the show because he goes against the grain of how he expects certain words and lines to be delivered, you know? So he's funny without trying to be funny.
Yeah.
You know? And I think we'll run into more of those examples as we progress throughout this season of Rogue and Picard.
Like any Tuvok Neelix interactions or anything.
Yeah.
Tuvok is just very dry and sardonic, and not sardonic, he's just very dry and reserved, and Neelix is not
the opposite.
Luckily, in this episode he was very, very toned down, not like the last episode we reviewed where he was a little over the top, but watching the two of them interact with each other is pretty entertaining.
So Tim Russ felt this was in contradiction to an earlier episode called Prime Factors. Can't remember that one off the top of my head. But so Tim Russ, he explains, these are his words, clearly in Prime Factors, he directly violated protocols up and down the line. Then, two episodes later, you have him talking about how stern he is about protocols.
That one.
You know,
that's the one where they end up on the pleasure planet with the technology that can.
Oh yeah, that one. Yeah.
And then he like.
Oh yes.
Subverts Janeway's wishes.
Yes, I remember.
So he's not a rule follower all the time. So that was.
That is an interesting contradiction.
Tim Russ has a good point.
He has a good point, Tim Russ. Tim Russ, good one. Well done on this. Yeah, good point. That should have been addressed in the writers' room.
Yeah, I'm surprised because I think they're a little more complicated there.
Yes, so eventually in the episode they do a 10-kilometer run all around the ship.
That, and on one of the decks, they actually lower the gravity. Or sorry, no, they raise the gravity by that. Yes, exactly. They raise the gravity by 10% on one of the decks. And just a couple days ago, you know, I did a 5K run, about half an hour, and it's exhausting. It is insanely exhausting, you know, and I can only imagine doing a 10K with gravity increased by 10%. And then at the end of that run, Tuvok is like, well, we lapped you a few times to finish the run, and not only that, we're doing this again tomorrow.
Yeah. You know? You have to do a better time.
You have to do a better time. That is cruel. That is borderline cruel and unusual punishment, I feel.
Well, in the Star Trek universe, too, Vulcans are stronger and faster.
Yes, exactly.
They go without food and water longer. Like,
yes.
They're better equipped to deal with that kind of thing. Humans and Bolians, I assume, and Bajorans are not.
They're not, no.
Yeah. So it's interesting that you kind of push them under.
Yeah, they're also wearing backpacks, too.
Mm.
You know, so,
absolutely.
And they're climbing the Jeffries tubes to start the run.
They climb up like 12 decks to get up there, yeah.
Yeah. I felt exhausted just watching that whole scene, you know.
Although it was awesome. They go through all that. They end up back in the hangar deck. You know, the ship explodes and all that. And then Bajoran is unconscious up on the upper deck. Tuvok, you know, kicks everybody out.
Yeah. He could have broken that guy's arm.
Yeah, he's going to break his arm. Like, not, wasn't even angry about it, but he's just like, matter of fact, I'm going to break your arm.
Yeah.
I
love that delivery. That's a good example of, like, a good, kind of funny delivery. Dude, I will just break your arm. It's like, there's no, it's a matter of fact sort of delivery.
Yeah,
you know?
Logic. That's
all
it was.
Yeah.
So that was entertaining.
Yeah.
Then the whole bit about, I'm of course jumping ahead, but the whole bit about, it climbs up, brings it down, the whole bit collapses. If you hadn't watched the whole thing play out, you would have kind of assumed that maybe Tuvok did that on purpose as a team building exercise to bring everybody together and forge some camaraderie.
Yeah.
You know, the comparison with this episode and another episode is that one where Janeway takes the four people or the three people.
Oh,
in,
yeah, the Misfits.
Shuttle,
the Misfits.
The Misfits,
yeah. That episode was called The Good Shepherd. Yeah, I don't know how I remember some of these episode titles sometimes, but it was called The Good Shepherd. Yeah. I really enjoyed that episode, actually. It was a good one. It was in season 6, I like that one.
Yeah, I can see the comparison on that as well. The Good Shepherd episode is the better episode.
Oh, for sure. Yeah,
absolutely.
Oh, yeah, that's right. That's what I wanted to ask you. The holodeck simulation. Remember that?
Yep.
The episode, yeah. So it never occurred to them to just escape. And I guess that was kind of in line with their characters. You know, they were my key.
The monkey and whatnot, yeah.
You know, they're like the Klingons of the Starfleet, I guess. You know, they're battle ready, fight first kind of mentality. So I guess I can see why they would choose that. But the fact that they would never consider to just to, you know, flee, well, I guess to me it's, it like, in that situation, I probably would have went.
Just cause as much damage as possible before dying. You know, trying to take as many of the bastards with you if you can, kind of thing.
It's a very Maquis sort of stance. I get it. So it was in line with her character. See, Dan, like that would be fun. Like if the real holodex existed, that would be a fun simulation to do with you. You know?
Yeah, it'd be fun. Captain and Navigator and all that, trying to figure out how to solve everything. Like,
yeah.
There's an awesome PlayStation VR game, Star Trek Bridge Command.
Yeah.
Where you're on the bridge, and you're each filling a role, and you all have to interact together and get things moving. It's pretty entertaining. It's not obviously quite the same thing, but you're in VR, so it's pretty cool.
Yeah. I think I would have ran in that situation. Like, Kirk always says, there's never a known situation. But,
This whole thing is, you know, change the rules.
But sometimes winning is just, as Tuvok said, is, you know, having the best possible outcome with the least possible damage, something
yes.
to that effect, right?
Yeah, so you can come back and fight again.
Exactly, you know.
Maybe win the fight this time.
Yeah.
Okay, so going back to the haze and confused juicy IPA, I'm liking it more and more. The more I drink it, the more I'm admiring its juicy aftertaste, and I'm willing to give it a rating at this point. Give it 7.5 out of 10. It's not. It's not great. It's not terrible. I've had better, but the aftertaste is definitely winning it for me. So, giving it 7.5 out of 10. Easy.
Okay, so what is your rating anyway for the Earl Grey?
Well, the Waterloo, I would have thought would be a 3, but because I'm drinking the Earl Grey, I moved it up to a 5, maybe a 6. So say 5.5.
Okay.
Yeah, it's probably not one I would get again, at least not for a while. But yeah, it was okay. It's not pretty middle of the road. Yeah. The Earl Grey, which I'm not quite finished because I'm taking my time with it, but and it was half a can when I started, so it's not good.
Collective Arts, they generally make good beer, but
yeah, they're usually really good. Like they have some good sours, some good IPAs, but I think I have to give this one maybe 2 tops.
Yeah. That might be the lowest rating for a beer we've had yet. Yeah,
it comes the question: do we tag the brewers? Breweries, if we give them a negative review,
we'll talk about it later. Yeah. That beer has been in my fridge for about 9 or 10 months. I don't think that would affect the taste of it, unless there's a best before.
I think it's just the addition of the cornflower petals, bergamot oil, black tea that kind of throw off the taste.
Yeah,
I don't think it.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I don't know what the first three of those ingredients even taste like. What do cornflower petals taste like?
Bergamot oil. I know I've had that before. I just can't remember how.
I've never even heard of that oil before. Bergamot?
Yeah. I've
never heard of bergamot oil before.
It's from a plant native to Australia. Right. Yeah, and then the coriander, which is spice, which is a weird thing. Well, maybe that's what I'm tasting. It's spice.
What an odd combination of ingredients for a beer, I feel.
Yeah, it's not what I'd get again, for sure.
Yeah, well, I mean, we had to have had reviewed that beer because it's called Earl Grey. You know, so if there's a beer out there called, you know, Tuvok or some Vulcan themed beer, please let us know.
Okay, continuing on in the episode, we are past the holodeck simulation parts. Oh yes,
yes, yes, yes. So the best line in the whole episode, if not maybe the entire series of Voyager, comes up in this episode. Dan, do you know what it could be?
No idea.
Okay. Get the cheese to sick bay.
Oh, yeah. That made me laugh.
Cheese to sick bay. That line is uttered in this episode. And, I definitely had to laugh when I heard that. There's this Twitter account called Star Trek Without Context. I don't know if you've heard of it. But, yeah, like, it just shows, you know, interesting lines from various Star Trek episodes with zero context. Like, ridiculous lines, you know. This would have been perfect for the Star Trek with no context Twitter accounts. Get the cheese to sick bay. But it does make sense in the grand scheme of the episode because the cheese, they think, is causing these spores to infect the bioneural gel packs. But the way Torres delivers that line, it is so straight-faced, so straight-faced.
Like it's an emergency case.
Yes, I mean, of course you would get the cheese to sick bay. There's no question about that, you know. And how no one reacts to that line is also hilarious in a way, you know. Like if
Star Trek is probably not the weirdest thing they've ever heard someone say.
Yeah.
My favorite Twitter account, Star Trek Twitter account, is just double checking here on Twitter. So my favorite Star Trek account is swear_trek, which is just GIFs of different scenes from all the different Star Treks, and they just added a bunch of swear to it. Sounds stupid, and it is, but it's
yeah, Dan just showed it to me. It's pretty good. Definitely worth a follow. Get the cheese to sickbay. Sorry, I'm still stuck on that line. I love it.
You know, the interesting thing about Tim Russ in real life is that he's in a band.
That's true.
Apparently back in the day, you could walk into a bar or two down in L.A. and he'd be playing.
Yes, that's right. I think we talked about that on a previous episode, didn't we? Or maybe I told you in private.
Maybe the last Tuvok episode.
Yeah. Okay, so I wrote here, Tuvok going back to save the ensign's life. Would he have done that if he had not spoken to Neelix about being flexible with the rules?
Well, given the episode from a few episodes prior where he overruled Janeway's decision and tried to sell the technology, I feel like he probably would have because he says he's a rule follower, but he's really not. So getting in the way of his own logic, I can see it.
At the heart of it, I think Tuvok is, he has a good heart. I mean, he's a very logical and emotional person, but he will do the right thing in a crisis, generally. If logic allows for it. And in that case, it was logical to save the crewman to gain respect from the other Maquis. That's my logic, anyway. Sorry, I have some food in my throat.
That happens when you chew on the podcast.
Well, I paused it, then I ate. Now we're recording, but...
Listeners, you can agree with me, I'm sure, that when people chew on a podcast, it drives you to fucking hell.
Well, what about drinking on a podcast? That's fun.
That's
right?
Fun. That's fun. It's the chewing. That's fun.
It's the chewing, yeah. No one likes to hear us, hear anybody chew on chips or popcorn or anything.
God, no.
Okay, so that's one of Dan's rules for this podcast. We cannot eat during the podcast. So,
during the podcast at all.
Yes.
So, even paused.
No, one pause, I mean, I can do whatever the hell I want. So, like, most of the time when I pause this podcast, it's either to pee or to eat, you know. So I feel Tuvok would have saved that crewman's life regardless of his talk with Neelix. You can still be an unemotional individual and, you know, follow logic to the nth degree, but still have empathy.
Yeah, and it's not that they don't have emotions, it's just that they suppress them.
Yeah, exactly.
So it's still feeling it, it's just, you know, not ruling its deserving.
Yeah. I mean, that pretty much brings us to the end of the episode here. The episode ends with, you know, Tuvok and Dolby coming to an agreement. Dolby saying, you know, if you can learn to be flexible a little bit, then, you know, we can learn to work with you. So I think, you know, it just kind of encapsulates the theme of the episode, which is, you know, to learn when to be flexible, to bend the rules a little bit. And
but how to make a connection with people that you don't really have a problem.
There you go. That's it, exactly. Yeah. So overall, as far as Tuvok episodes go, I'm giving this a 7 out of 10. 7 cups of tea out of 10, in fact.
I forget how many cups of tea I gave the last one.
I don't think it was very high. I think it was like 4 or 5, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Felt like a
'cause I enjoyed this episode, but like for Tuvok episodes, colored by what I know is coming, I'm going to give it a solid 6, I think.
Solid 6,
yeah.
Okay.
Like they're definitely... From what we've seen, it's a good episode. Solid, all around. Nothing surprising, nothing too different, nothing of the ordinary, but some really good Tuvok. Building his character, showing what he can do. Yeah, I'm good with the 6.
Okay. So the next episode we'll be doing is Meld. That's season 2, episode 16. Yes, we'll have a lot to say about that episode.
One of my favorite Voyager episodes.
Yeah, I'd say it's in my top 10, definitely.
Yeah, easily, yeah.
Yep. Okay, so we're just going to take a quick break, and then we will have the conclusion of today's episode.
Okay.
All right, and we are back. So we're just going to play the trailer for you for the next episode that we're going to review called Meld. Dan, whenever you're ready. That might be the best Tuvok episode. I don't want to, you know, make that a definite, but that might be the best Tuvok episode. I don't know.
Year of Hell. The one where he's helping Cass try to learn to control her ability.
Oh, yeah.
That's a good one.
That's a good one, yeah.
Yeah.
Year of Hell I haven't seen in years.
The one where he's on Bonfire.
Yeah.
Yeah, we've got some good stuff coming up. I think the episode quality will gradually escalate
Yeah, I mean, the series generally gets better as the seasons go by. I think season 3 or 4 is when it hits.
Like any Star Trek, right? Once you get past the first 2 seasons, it's great.
Yeah, every Star Trek series is like that. With the exception of Discovery, which just sucks completely, like, throughout the whole series.
But Lower Decks was funny, right?
Yeah, Siri, okay. Yeah.
I will say, though, that Voyager had the best series premiere, probably, out of all of these Star Treks.
Yeah, the most solid, most well done, the most engaging.
But in all the series, season of 1 and 2, I guess, I mean, the original series, you can discount that one, right? So, that was had a really good first two seasons. But TNG, DS9, Voyager.
They're a struggle to get through this.
There are some diamonds in the rough, though, in those first two seasons, but they're few and far between.
Part of it seems like the cast and crew trying to figure out how to make everything work, because there's so many cast members that have to give time to. There's a lot of story to tell, not really much time to tell, and so they kind of get lost.
It's the writers trying to figure out the characters.
Yeah.
It's a big part of it. Yeah.
Okay, so I don't think I'm going to get to my second beer tonight, so I'm going to save this one. It's for the next episode, I will drink the Boxing Bruin, or sorry, it's Doc Purdue's Boxing Bruin IPA from Cowbell Brewing, so I'll have that on the next episode.
Yeah, and I didn't get to the Cowbell Hazy Days, but I will try to hang on to that for the next time.
Yeah, so Cowbell Brewing, wait until you hear our next episode, we'll have some thoughts about your beers. Okay, what else? I think that's about all
yeah,
we can... That's about it.
Good, yeah.
Yep, so I gave it a 7 out of 10, you gave it a 6 out of 10.
Mm-hmm. Yep.
We reviewed our beers, so just wait until we review the next episode, which will be a biggie, Meld. We'll get to that soon, and I think we'll have a lot of thoughts about that episode, and we'll be talking about some Cowbell Brewing IPAs.
Till then, how do we sign off?
Live long and prosper, maybe.
Peace and long life.
Peace and long life, and live long and prosper, and tea Earl Grey hot. All right, see you, everyone.